Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're asking, is smart mobility set for takeoff? Technological advances could reshape the way people experience mobility. This week our panel discusses the pace of progress in this sector and the areas of opportunity for businesses and investors alike. We start with Rolf Ganter, UBS research analyst. Rolf, you've been tracking and analysing this sector for years. What's the key changes? What are the key narrative shifts just in the last few years? What have you noticed? It's a whole sector that you know so well, of course.
Yeah, it's actually really true. What happened is the following. I mean, if I just go back, because I meet a lot of CEOs and CFOs of global auto manufacturers. If you ask them, for example, back in 2007, 2008, what about electric cars? You know, there was this American electric car producer producing a couple of roadsters. And they said, in the discussion, you probably talked 1 minute about electrification of cars, and you talked 59 minutes about the next upgrade of the 8-cylinder, the next 3-liter, whatever turbo, all these kind of things. So 59 minutes traditional business, 1 minute electrification has no future. And it, just like a fast forward, nowadays you probably spend 59 minutes talking about electrification, about autonomous driving, and about car sharing, and actually probably around 1%, and by the way, diesel, and then 1% probably about all the remaining other things. So a big shift in terms of how the industry looks at these things. So and that happened over the last 2-3 years. And for me, actually, that was like the Lehman Brothers moment for the auto industry was actually when the diesel incident of Volkswagen broke around 2 years ago. And since then, there's a lot of change.
Well, yeah, and I guess if we go back to that incident, that caused a number of people, I guess, to be a bit more cynical or maybe to approach some of the claims about the pace of technological advancement within the automotive sector with a degree of skepticism. How much of a problem was that? And do you think that if we look at all kinds of green technologies, there's still a bit of a reluctance, maybe a bit of skepticism from some quarters? Is that a fair point?
Yeah, actually, it's a fair point, but it has more to do that when you look around, they're not so really, let's say, marketable products out there. Because, I mean, this American company, they came out there, they have a very expensive product out there. And yes, there are also some other names from Japan and also, let's say, from France, companies who produce now some electric cars. But it's not like appealing to the broad mass. Now, if we look forward, if you look, for example, and I just returned yesterday from Mercedes, where we had a big event where actually when they show their future products, you see actually how especially the German guys now finally woke up and produce a lot of these kind of electrified cars, which brings, let's say, the technology from high end down to even the middle class or the lower ground. And this is, I think, makes it then really appealing to consumers that you have now cars and a big variety and selection you can really choose from.
Rolf, let's talk about smart mobility. Is it a movement that is of the moment, or is it a long-term, really structural shift?
We really look at it as a structural shift. I'll give you an example. If you look how much more safety features this kind of autonomous driving brings to the real world, i.e. you're going to reduce big time, you know, the number of deaf people on the road, the number of people being injured. Because if I just look around sometimes to see how many people are, you know, having their mobile phone in their hands while driving or trying to drive at the same time, these things will be, let's say, part of the history. So you could probably easily, if you go for full automation, i.e. Robo taxis or fully autonomous, you could probably reduce accidents at least by 90%. And I think this is one big safety feature. And the other one is clearly also more comfort, because there's nothing more relaxing in a traffic jam than let the car drive. And if you want to go on a Swiss mountain, yes, you take over, but not beforehand in the traffic jam. So for me, or for us, actually, it's a structural trend, irreversible, and the powertrain, i.e. electrification, also starts slowly but surely. But for us, I think this thing can no longer stop, but it's just a question of how fast it will be rolled out.
Laura Kane is UBS Head of Thematic Research for the United States. Laura, how would you describe the significance of smart mobility as one of these key longer-term investment themes?
Smart mobility is an area that we're getting more and more interest in. And for those not familiar with the term, it encompasses three different areas all related to how we get around. So the first is the electrification of vehicles. So cars that, you know, are a lot cleaner for the environment, and we are seeing this greater sense of social consciousness in the U.S. So I think there is demand for cleaner vehicles, and we're also seeing at least at the state level, that there is some regulatory support around reducing emissions. The second area is autonomous vehicles, so driverless cars, which of course there is a lot of interest in. And I think we're still in early stages in terms of getting to a world where robo taxis and driverless cars dominate the highways. But there is a lot of interest in what the future will look like in terms of the driverless possibilities. And I think right now what we're seeing is that the first stages of this are getting more kind of automated safety features added to vehicles. And we're seeing those become more prevalent and grow in popularity. And by 2020, we expect that around 50% of vehicles will have some kind of driver assistance automation built into the vehicle. And then the third area is, of course, ride hailing. So, people, especially I live in New York City, we see a big trend toward people using their smartphones to order a ride. And there's a lot of, I would say the market is still somewhat fragmented. We see a lot of new players still coming to the market, and we're seeing that these services are in demand and really growing in popularity.
One of the themes that we often discuss on our program is sustainability and sustainable investing. And I guess that a lot of those overarching themes to do with smart mobility you've mentioned there suggest in my mind, or bring to mind, some of those sustainable principles. I mean, do you sort of classify smart mobility as a sustainable, as part of, under that sort of sustainable investment umbrella?
Yeah, we certainly do. So, I mean, I think if you think of the electrification of vehicles, of course, that helps to reduce emissions, but there's also other benefits that might not be so obvious. So if you think about driverless cars, for example, those hold huge benefits in terms of improved safety, whether it's a fully autonomous vehicle or vehicles, as I mentioned, that have these driver assistance systems built into them. In the U.S., we still have over 40,000 traffic deaths every year. So I think as we get more autonomous features, that can definitely play a role in increasing safety, which has a tie-in to sustainability in my mind. And even as far as ride sharing, right, that actually we're seeing some services actually offer people to, you know, they call it like a carpool service. So you're riding with more than one individual in a vehicle. So that too reduces the number of individual vehicles on the road. So there definitely is a tie-in to sustainability.
Now, there are some dissenting voices out there, particularly when it comes to driverless cars, to full automation. Is our automotive future really as autonomous as perhaps we're led to believe? Well, Christian Wolmar, the writer and broadcaster, is one of the UK's leading commentators on transport and a former London mayoral candidate, no less. He spoke to Monocle earlier and he thinks we might have been rather taken for a ride.
Well, I'm not convinced, really, for both technical reasons and social political reasons. The technical reasons are that they are finding it very difficult to make 100% driverless cars. And that's when all the supposed benefits, I see it as rather dystopian, actually, but nevertheless, the supposed benefits of, say, blind people being able to be taken around in a driverless car and all that, they only come into play if you have totally driverless cars. So we have cars that have driver aids that drive themselves on motorways, maybe even on dual carriageways, even maybe occasionally in suburban networks where they have been mapped. But we have nothing like a vehicle that could cope with what I call the Holborn problem, which is 6 o'clock outside Holborn Station in the centre of London. There's actually hundreds of pedestrians streaming into the streets, absolute mayhem. And the idea that a driverless car would ever be able to go through that and cut away through all those people is very, very far off, if ever. But socially and politically, I don't see this as happening either. There's no great demand for driverless cars. People actually quite like being in control. And the notion that is put out by Waymo, which is Google, and some of the other tech companies and the auto manufacturers, is that we'll all be in these driverless electric pods that we won't need to buy, and that we'll just pay for them per journey, like with Uber. It's completely fanciful. It involves a utter revolution in the way we think about our transport and our goods, actually, what we own. People like owning their car. They like putting their golf clubs in the back of it or their baby seats. They like tuning their radios to, you know, Heart FM or whatever. And the notion that we'll suddenly all be sharing these pods, which will then drive us around automatically, is completely fanciful. I read an article today in a car website called The Drive, where the bloke rightly suggested that maybe it's 50 years off or maybe never. And that's my view as well.
I wonder if there might be a risk, if we look at transport policy, that trusting driverless and AI in automotive might paper over the cracks, and that actually policymakers mustn't get complacent. Is there a risk of that here?
I think there's a really dangerous aspect of this, which is that we are being hyped here. We're being fooled into thinking that we don't have to do anything about transport policy because these driverless cars are going to come along and save the day, you know, like Superman, keeping away from kryptonite, you know, and it's just not going to happen. And so therefore, we've still got the same issues of transport policy and congestion and trains that have too many people on them and the cost of it all and the need for investment. And yet they're going to say, oh, no, we don't need any of this. We're just going to have driverless cars. So there's a real danger that policymakers have been sucked into this. Philip Hammond said recently, oh, there's going to be driverless cars by 2021. Well, Philip, I can tell you this now. There ain't going to be anything that is a real driverless car that will be able to take you into the treasury and then whisk your go home and whisk your kids to school or whatever. Not going to happen.
Christian Woolmer. Still to come on The Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the client side of the equation and consider who the winners and losers are or might be in this fast-changing landscape. Let's look next at the client side. Laura Kane, what do you and your colleagues advise when clients ask about how best to position themselves and their portfolio to take advantage of this fast-changing landscape?
I think where we see the biggest opportunity right now is in the electrical and electronic components for electric vehicles. I mean, I think some of the other areas are still kind of more in their nascent stages. So if you think of ride sharing, I still feel that we don't know who the dominant players will be. And a lot of the revenues still accrue to the drivers who are using their own assets, right, their own vehicles and their man hours. So I think until we get to more of a robo-taxi type of environment, it's going to be hard to really assess the true profitability of some of these ride-sharing tech companies. So I think it's still early stages in that sense, and also a lot of the bigger players within the ride-hailing space are still not public companies, right? So it's a difficult space to kind of invest in at this stage. And then on the autonomous side, I think there's a lot of opportunities within the tech space. If you think about even different software to help analyze all the data that's going to be generated from these driverless cars and assessing the road and even all the mapping technology. So there really is a very vast number of opportunities. But that being said, it is hard to really find pure plays within this space. So I think we're still kind of in early stages for a lot of smart mobility investments. And I think there kind of has to be a careful assessment of some of the risks and an understanding that even as far as the driverless world, we're not fully there yet. And it's one of those technologies where I think we're just kind of at the tipping point where it's about to take off, but the kind of broader ecosystem is not yet built out in terms of all the infrastructure, all the technologies needed, all the regulation needed. So there's going to be a lot of changes still to that landscape. So it's a difficult place to invest, I think, at this stage.
Looking to the client side, with you next, Rolf Ganter, what do you and your colleagues advise when clients ask the same questions about taking advantage here?
Don't put all the eggs in one basket. So clearly, diversification is always key. We know that investing, but especially here where we have these kind of technological disruptions or innovations, you have to really look at it on a broader scale. So what are we looking at? Companies, for example, in sensorics, in electronics, where all the engine management system, battery management system, in, you know, all these things relate to radar, laser, all these things which enable actually that people can drive in an autonomous way. But also when you look further down the road on the battery side, for example. So we go across the whole value chain, because at the end, you don't know right now who will be the ultimate winner and who is not the winner. So as I said, please, when you look at these things, look at it really from a broader scale across various technologies and also various regions, because here I think we will see big surprises over the next few years, and that I think you cannot plan all these kind of things. But we are sure the future goes towards smart mobility.
And what about winners or losers in the space? Is that even the right question to be asking at this time, Rolf?
There will be certainly some losers if you look at companies which are really focusing only, let's say, on mechanical parts. So if you're a classical automotive supplier producing pistons, you know, engine blocks, everything related to combustion engines, you can be damn sure that you will be a long-term loser. But never forget, even by 2025, and this is still, let's say, 8 years away, probably still we're going to sell around 100 million cars per year on this planet, which contains still a combustion engine. Because we will not drive all with full electric. We're going to have plug-in hybrids, 48-volt mild hybrid systems, which still need a combustion engine. And so, therefore, it's not happening overnight. But clearly, when we look at them, companies, they would have to transform. And we see that because we meet so many companies. They're really there. They see what's happening, and they're investing a lot of research and development and CapEx right now to go in this direction. So, actually, we're quite confident. And I think we're looking forward for quite an interesting future in the automotive field.
Laura Kane, a last word to you. If we're talking about this world, it's changing fast. So is it too soon to talk about potential winners and losers?
In some ways, it's kind of on the early side. But as I mentioned, we do think that there are opportunities in terms of the supply chain of electric components for some of the electrified vehicles. I think one of the bigger debates is around what's going to happen with the traditional automotive OEMs. And I think for me right now, it's still both a risk and an opportunity, right? So those auto manufacturers who get on the trend of electrifying vehicles, embedding autonomous safety features, I think could emerge as leaders in the space. But then, of course, those that don't innovate definitely have the potential to be left behind. So I think there's still some opportunities to be had there, but I wouldn't go to the extreme view to say that the OEMs will be left in the dust with these trends coming on. So I think it's still early, but there are definitely some opportunities that we can highlight.
And that's Laura Kane bringing us to the end of this 178th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.